You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 6th of January 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I'm very pleased to say today that we are welcoming back veteran nationalist Mr. I, who we haven't spoken to for a month. Mr. I, welcome back. How are you, sir?
Not too good, actually, but I have good days and bad days.
Well, it's very nice to be speaking to you once again. I was hoping we might delve into quite a few different topics today, really. But the first one I really wanted to ask you about was William Joyce, because apparently this week was the anniversary of his hanging.
It is, yes, 74 years ago. He was hanged 74 years ago. And there is an interesting point about him. He was not the original Lord Hawhor. He inherited the name from the first chap who spoke on the English broadcast from Germany. His name was Norman Bailey Stewart, and he had an upper class accent from which the haw-haw was rather high. Joe, haw-haw, that sort of thing. Now, he used to broadcast from Germany, and after the war, we couldn't touch him because he was a citizen of the Irish Republic, which was neutral during the war. So we had no jurisdiction over him whatsoever. And there are a couple of things I can remember particularly. Was everyone used to tune in to the 9 o'clock news in the evening for a report on the war from our side, and it was always preceded by the strokes of Big Ben. And this voice from the German radio used to butt in saying that this is the death knell of the British Empire. And of course it proved to be. What's the death knell of the British Empire? And of course he used to start his programs with Germany calling, Reich centers Hamburg and Bremen. And then his opening line, I think the one that's mostly remembered, was "Where is the Ark Royal?" The Ark Royal then was our latest aircraft carrier. But a few days into the war, HMS Glorious was torpedoed in the Bristol Channel, and the U-boat commander mistakenly took it for the Ark Royal. And of course that was very unfortunate, because it was a Devonport ship sailing out of Plymouth, and it wasn't properly prepared for action, and there were still a lot of dockyard workers on board her when she was torpedoed. So it was to the people right here in Plymouth, many of them had lost their sons and husbands on it, who weren't actually in the Navy, but working in the dockyard. The Ark Royal was eventually torpedoed off the coast, the southern coast of Spain, that's why it was torpedoed off the southern coast of Spain. And I can remember a girl who was in my class at school. I was walking along the station road, and she got off her bicycle and walked towards a newspaper shop, and there was billboards outside saying the Ark Royal was sunk, and her brother was on it, and she nearly passed out, poor girl. I had to go and help her. Yeah, that was a rotten thing. But fortunately, he did survive. She wasn't sunk immediately, but they were able to save most of the crew. William Joyce's.
Were you saying there that William Joyce was actually able to butt in over the BBC radio and say what's happening to the British Empire?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't think it was actually William Joyce's voice, but somebody from Radio Hamburg, from Germany, as the bell chimed for the 9 o'clock news, they used to say this is the death knell of the British Empire. But I don't actually think it was William Joyce's voice, but somebody from the radio station.
Wow, so they were actually able to hijack the radio, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
They would butt in to our news bulletins. Of course, they'd had overrun France, so they were just a few miles away over the channel. Before the war, there was just the BBC, the one program on the BBC, and people used to listen to what was Radio Normandy at Fécamp on the just the other side of the channel near Calais, and they played the sort of popular music which during the war the BBC opened what they called the Forces Program, which played popular stuff. With Sir John Rees, who was boss of the BBC, it was the primary task of the radio was to inform and educate people, not so much to entertain them. But because when the Germans had captured Radio Normandy, that they then the BBC started the Forces program playing popular music and by the entertainers.
Well, how did people actually used to listen to Lord Haw Haw's programmes then? Did they have to tune in to a different frequency, or did it just hijack the BBC radio waves? How did people actually listen to it?
You could tune in directly to Radio Hamburg.
Ah, right, I've got you. So it was actually on Radio Hamburg. So it was an English language programme that was on the German radio.
On the German radio, that's right, yeah.
Right, so people would be tuning into that. Okay.
And then, as I say, that they captured the French broadcasting stations that were just across the channel, which of course was a clearer signal, and they used to use those as well.
Right, well, what about Charlie and his orchestra? Where did they come in?
John mentioned that to me, and I can't remember anything about that at all.
Well, that was swing music. It was swing music, and I mean, obviously, the National Socialists were against jazz, but they knew that jazz was sort of taking off in Britain at the time, and they had this group called Charlie and His Orchestra, and they would write swing songs, and they would mock Churchill, and they would mock Roosevelt, and they would sing about these great big the failures that Churchill had made during the war. And I was just wondering where that used to get played, whether that was, I guess that must have been played on the Berlin radio as well, but it can't have been on William Joyce's broadcasts if you're not aware of it.
No, I've never heard of it at all.
We'll have to get you some of it.
So always listened into him.
And you used to listen in to him, did you? Did much of Britain used to listen to what William Joyce had to say?
Yeah. His broadcasts were regarded as sort of entertainment because he used to make such exaggerated claims as to how many of their ships they'd sunk. and of course his voice was what they called a mid-Atlantic dialect, which was sort of Irish and half American. And he was one of the most popular entertainers, really.
Well, why were they so against him, do you think? Why were they so, why were they so vicious and vindictive at the end of the war to hang him?
Well, we go right to it all, because he was an American citizen. And at the time he was broadcasting to Britain, America wasn't in the war. So, the Americans couldn't put anything on him. And we got round. He wasn't a British citizen, as say he was an American citizen. But because he had applied for a British passport in 1939, now he was tipped off by an MI5 agent who knew him when he belonged to the British fascisti before the war, which that they were one of the things they used to do was steward Conservative Party meetings in England, because they used to be disrupted by communists, and that's where he got his the scar on his face when one of the communists thrashed him with a razor. Well, he was stewarding a Conservative Party meeting. And the British Assisi was run by a woman, actually, called Linter. Which has completely flown out of my mind. But she was the granddaughter of a British Field Marshal, hopefully.
I did hear that the 1922 committee was named after something to do with Benito Mussolini and the fascists. Do you know anything about that?
Well, that's the Tory part, isn't it? The 1922.
Yes.
That was something to do with a group of Tories moving away from the basic Tory principles, I think. Not altogether sure about that. But, of course, that then, long before the war, just before the formation of the British Union, so it must be the Tory party that communists were attacking. Oh yeah, her name was Rosa Linton Woolman, L-I-N-T-O-M T-O-R-N hyphen O-R-M-I-N.
Well, since you brought up the communists there, I mean, this was another question that I had. I wondered what the British public thought of having Stalin as an ally and being allied with the Soviets, and whether there was any pushback towards that, and just you know, how was it sold to the people? Oh, Stalin is now our ally, after the British public knew about Bolshevism and Churchill had written about Bolshevism, and he'd written about the fact that that all the leadership of the Bolsheviks were Jewish. So how did the public take this about turn, and suddenly Stalin was our best friend and he was our ally? How was that sold to the public?
Well, as you know, in the 1930s was the time when he was carrying out all the purges of important people in his own Communist Party, and particularly generals in the Red Army. And the one who eventually became the commander-in-chief of the Russian armies during the war, General Zhukov, he was lucky to get away with it because he was in Siberia, 8,000 miles away from Moscow. Stalin's clutches didn't reach him. Now, of course, Churchill called Stalin a bloody baboon sat on a throne of skulls. When they met at the conference in
the Yalta conference,
the place on the Black Sea.
Was that not the Yalta conference? I can't think of the name of the other place. The place where they had the Olympics?
the small tent.
I can't think of it.
That we saw on the Yalta, that's right, at the Yalta conference. The first thing he said to Stalin was, "Do you forgive me?" So we knew what was going on. But I can remember people were saying, well, they think Hitler has bitten off more than he could chew. And they were glad that to know that his main resources would be absorbed in the attack on Russia. And of course he attacked Russia in June 1941, and as far as we were concerned, that was the end of the Blitz. His forces had been turned away from attacking Britain. So that's something the people were pleased about.
What was the general feeling? So there wasn't a general feeling of that's good for the Russians. They're being liberated from the Soviets. Then it was more a feeling of, well, thank God he's no longer bombing London.
They were absorbing the German war effort, which would have been directed against us. So I'll say the Blitz had ended. And that there was no hope of them ever invading Britain. As a matter of fact, there never was any hope of them invading Britain, because they had no amphibious capacity to cross the Channel. And they used to show photographs that the RAF had taken of Rotterdam, with all these barges there. But of course, that was the barges used to move goods along the River Rhine. And of course, there was no exports, but they were just laid up. They would never have been able to cross the English Channel or the North Sea. Well, they'd have to start off in the North Sea, of course. And I can remember the Navy saying that if they had attempted to use these barges in an invasion effort, all they had to do was send a destroyer along at top speed.
Yeah, that would be impossible, using barges for something like that. Were the public told at all that Rudolf Hess had parachuted into the country, or was that kept secret until the end of the war?
Oh, that was a dreadful business, really. He'd come on a peace visit, and of course the Churchill clique in Parliament, that they'd worked for to get the war going, and obviously they didn't want to have anything to do with peace missions. And he tried to contact that chap in Scotland that he knew quite well. Can't think of his name there. But anyway, our government would have nothing to do with these peace missions. And they appointed a Jew, an Estonian Jew with a name that was unpronounceable in English, to interrogate him. And he was subjected to the most awful third degree at one time he tried to commit suicide by jumping down a stairwell. Terrible the way he was treated. And of course at the Nuremberg trial, they thought he was the weakest one and would crack under the interrogation. Everybody surprised. He made some famous speech. I have no regrets.
And we had to leave the interview there. We're just getting too much background noise from the telephone line. I do apologise about the sound quality on that. We will try and improve it for the next one. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.